It's Monday, and we have all-star rosters. They will change over the next week as people say no thank you. But on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we are going to break down all 8,000 players that will be headed to Texas next week.
And more importantly, the 8,000 players who we feel have been slandered. And we're not invited to the All-Star game. We're going to talk snubs. And, of course, we had all kinds of baseball this weekend that we must recap in segment format. It's Baseball Barbacast. It's Monday. Let's get to it.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows if you don't get mad about snubs for the All-Star game, you don't even like the sport. I'm Jake Mintz, and that's Jordan Schusterman. And I am not just mad. I'm embarrassed and disappointed for not just the sport of baseball, but for the entire American experiment, okay, that Francisco Lindor was not elected to the All-Star game.
Yeah, this is a dark day. Sure, we could celebrate all the first-time All-Stars. Sure, we could celebrate all the incredible young talent, these amazing crop of, you know, we got some rookies in the All-Star game. Oh, my gosh, Skeens and Merrill, and oh, there's Ellie and all these. No. No, Jake, today is about getting angry. We are going to get into the snubs, of course. We are going to recap the weekend of baseball that was. They just kept playing, man. They just, every day I wake up and I look at the schedule and they have more baseball games going on. It's ridiculous. It's really, really just kind of exhausting me at this point. I'm glad we're almost to this break. We need a few days where we say, hey, let's take it easy here. No baseball for a couple of days. Just kidding. I'm so glad we have baseball every day, honestly, because that means that every day, if we didn't like the day before, we got another one coming. Jake, let's start with those All-Star rosters. We had the reserves and the pitchers announced. I know we talked earlier this season about how we wish we get to vote for the pitchers. No, these reserves and the pitchers were selected by a combination. This is an important place to start. A combination of a player ballot and the commissioner's office, who gets to select the rest of the teams, mostly to ensure that there is at least one player from every team on these All-Star teams. Now, Jake, it is interesting because they do seem to, at least to some degree, signify, okay, this was a player ballot selection versus this was a commissioner's office selection. And that is important, certainly in some cases, because it sort of reveals which teams or which players are getting love from their fellow peers versus which teams are or which players are for some reason being selected by a undetermined group of people in the commissioner's office. I do not believe this is very specifically Rob Manfred's job. It is his office's job. How many people that is involved or involved in that process, who knows? But I do like that they designate that and that it is not a mystery. With that said, Jake, let's get to it. We're not going to, I don't think we have to read every single player on the roster, but who stands, let's get to the players who are on the roster who will be All-Stars. What stands out to you?
What stands out to me? Great question, Jordan. Whenever I see an All-Star roster, the two things that, you know, make me think are the ends of the spectrum, the players who have been here 1,000 times and the players that have never been here before. So we have 32 first-time All-Stars, which is cool. But then there's like Salvador Perez, who is being elected to his 9th All-Star game, which is like the 5th or 6th most all-time for a catcher, right? Altuve, I know he was a starter, but like he's already like top 5 in second baseman all time. And so to see these people who are staples at the All-Star game, because every additional game matters when we look back in 20 years at the resume of a player. It's like, think about when, you know, like when Willie Mays passed away, when Hank Aaron passed away, one of the things people say is like, this dude went to 20,000 All-Star games, right? That number is imposing and daunting and impressive and huge. And each individual game obviously makes a difference. In terms of the first time guys, I mean, to me, it's like the total improbable names that have ended up here. And for me, I just would like to read those off if you don't mind. We know Jurickson Profar is starting. That's a big one. David Fry, okay, DH/utility boy for the Cleveland Guardians. Heliot Ramos, who outfielder for the Giants, Seth Lugo for the Royals, Kirby Yates for the Rangers, Jackson Merrill for the Padres, and Paul Skeens for the Pirates. Let's start with David Fry, which is hilarious. What makes him such an improbable pick? I feel confident that this is the first time that both of our mothers who listen to the show have heard the name David Fry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is one of the best stories of the season. This was a, you know, utility type player who, you know, a senior sign, a late round pick, who kind of was just the kind of guys where it's like you keep putting up enough numbers as you climb the minor leagues. And this is someone who, you know, was not even originally drafted by Cleveland, originally drafted by Milwaukee. But at some point, if you keep putting up numbers in the minors, you will probably get a shot, especially if you can play multiple positions. And David Fry, especially having that catcher eligibility, I would say, is kind of what helped him get to that point. You know, he debuted last year, and then here he is at 28 and just an all-time heater over the first few months. He's definitely cooled off lately. But I think what's really cool, again, kind of getting back to the distinction between player selection versus commissioner selection, is, again, if we are to trust what is on MLB.com, which I think we have to, David Fry, a player selection, the fact that he has earned the respect of his players as someone who is relatively anonymous is pretty amazing. And I think that when you compare that to some of the other but I think that that's a great example, because some of the other player selections, like Marcus Semien, who is not having a great season, but you understand, even Salvador Perez, who is having a great season, but, you know, there are some other catchers that maybe are slightly more deserving. But Luis Arraez, another guy who, you know, you could say by some metrics is not necessarily having as good of a season as some of the other first basemen in the National League, for sure. But players respect the hell out of these guys, and that's not that surprising. So for David Fry to be player selected, it shows how much of an impression that he's made on the guys that they've played against.
Right. And it's not particularly surprising that some of these other names, right, like Skeens and Elliot Ramos, you know, like, there are players who usually, like, the players are just going to vote for the older players, right? There's a real sense of, you know, tenure and seniority that is baked into this process, which obviously makes it is a little bit silly at times, but that's just kind of a reality. Ellie was voted in, though, Jordan, whereas Skeens was a selection by the commissioner's office.
Yes. So that is an important distinction. Brian Reynolds, of course, was already the Pirates representative, and he was a player selection. So, you know, the Pirates were covered. It's not like they needed one in the same way that Ellie is the only Reds All-Star. But, man, I mean, again, that's the process of making sure everyone gets it. You know, first they go to the players and whatnot. But it's really something. And I think when we talk about first timers, you know, it's two different categories. It's the guys that we knew were going to be All-Stars at some point. Okay, great. Gunnar Henderson is an All-Star for the first time. Well, then Bobby Witt Jr. is an All-Star for the first time. Well, of course. The first will be of 10, 15, 20 times for these guys. And that's great. But the guys who it's kind of a culmination of reaching this point, whether it's a hot star like David Fry or to me, Seth Lugo is, I think, the best example, a guy who has been a major leaguer for a long time and has had success, but hasn't quite put it all together in the way that he has this year in Kansas City. Yeah, I think he's one that really stands out to me in that regard.
I'd actually like to go turbo mode quickly and just fly through these names. I think it's worthwhile for people just to hear and just go very briefly on each of these guys. So I'm going to go times two speed and just let it rip. Tyler Anderson, I'll start with the American League pitchers. Tyler Anderson, Angels. The Angels are bad. Tyler Anderson is having one heck of a season. Corbin Burns, Orioles, duh. Emmanuel Clase for the Guardians was not great last year, but really has been incredible. My favorite thing about him, Jordan, he like doesn't walk anybody, even though he throws 1,000 miles an hour. Third All-Star game for him. Garrett Crochet for the White Sox, his first All-Star game. Logan Gilbert, the only Mariners rep. Clay Holmes, probably worth talking about this now. Clay Holmes selected. He has been absolute cheeks for the last month and probably does not deserve to be here. He was surprised that he was selected. Andrés Muñoz of the Mariners, or even Craig Kimbrell from the Orioles, feel like superior selections.
I mean, there's a lot of people, Twins fans, oh, Griffin Jacks. Like, there's always going to be relievers that are left off that are more than deserving because the reliever numbers are so wild now. And this one, especially being a commissioner's office pick, is not great.
It's also weird because I understand fans saying, oh, well, they just want to shoehorn Yankees into the game. I guarantee you that Yankees fans are not exactly enthused to turn on the TV and watch more Clay Holmes right now. Okay. There are zero Yankees fans on planet Earth that are more likely to watch the All-Star game because Clay Holmes is in it. That is not how this happened. Yeah. Just be clear.
And I would say, right, we kind of made fun of Yankees fans for freaking out when Holmes had that blown save like 3 weeks ago. Because he had only had one the whole season. Like, it was a second run he allowed all season. Well, he has been indeed terrible since then. So I don't know if they have manifested that into existence or if he was bad all along. But yeah, I don't love this pick.
Flying through, Tanner Houck with Red Sox. He's been really representative of Boston's pitching turnaround. Seth Lugo for the Royals, who you already mentioned. Mason Miller, the triple-digit king, hardest thrower in baseball, Oakland's only representative. Cole Reagans, who the Royals got last year at the deadline for Aroldis Chapman, who totally bungled the game over the weekend, but Reagans is headed to Texas. Tarik Skubal, Cy Young front runner, in my opinion, for the Tigers. And then Kirby Yates in his second All-Star game. The 37-year-old has been sensational this year for Texas. Great example of a player who's voted in by other players. Like, he has a lot of respect around the game. I think he's only allowed 3 runs this year so far in 31 1/3 innings. Moving on to the National League pitchers, Tyler Glasnow for the Dodgers. Crazy, it's his first All-Star selection. He's just been in our lives now for so long. Very deserving. He is sensational. Ryan Helsley for the Cardinals, who has 31 saves, which is spectacular considering the Cardinals have 47 wins. His second All-Star game. Jeff Hoffman and Matt Strom of the Phillies, two relievers who've been vital in the Phillies, opening up such a big gap in the AL East so far this year. Shota Imanaga for the Cubs, Japanese rookie. He was the best pitcher in baseball for 2 months. He's been bad since June 1st, but he was so good over those first 2 months that it doesn't matter. And it's not like the Cubs have anybody else. 2 Braves pitchers, Ronaldo Lopez and Chris Sale. Sale being back here is so cool. 8th All-Star game. He could start. He's an option to start if they're going to go with the you've earned it nod just because he's been around so long.
I mean, 8th All-Star game, he made 7 in a row from 2012 to 2018, right? And then hasn't been there since then. So, yeah, Sale definitely one of the stories of the year. And so is Ronaldo Lopez, right? I mean, when they signed him and they're like, yeah, they're actually going to have Ronaldo Lopez start. And we were all like, why? He's an awesome reliever. They don't need him. Turns out they definitely needed him. And he has been absolutely outstanding. That is one of the biggest organizational identification and developmental wins of the entire season is what the Braves have done with Ronaldo Lopez.
Where would the Atlanta Braves be without Ronaldo Lopez is a real sentence that makes sense in the year of our Lord 2024. Flying down this list, Tanner Scott of the Miami Marlins. He's the only Marlins rep, his first All-Star game. He is going to get traded at the deadline this year and throw very meaningful innings for a playoff team. And he will be very famous and then make a ton of money this winter as a free agent. Paul Skeens, Pittsburgh Pirates, commissioner selection. I think on Wednesday, I want to have the should Paul Skeens start the All-Star game hot take conversation. Not now, though. Ranger Suarez, Philly starter in his first All-Star game. He's been a little bit worse his last 2 starts, but just what a phenomenal year for him. Been a staple for the Phillies in the last 2 postseasons, and for him to kind of put a lot of it together during the regular season has been really cool. Robert Suarez, 33-year-old for the Padres. He's making his first All-Star game. Zach Wheeler making only a second All-Star game, which is bizarre. He is not going to play. I believe that is because he is scheduled to pitch on Sunday and he had a kid in spring training. And so I think understandably wants to see his child. And then Logan Webb in his first All-Star game, the guy just sponges up innings. Nothing like a single baller on a national stage. So it's great because, like, in an exhibition game for 1 inning, Logan Webb does not really get to shine. But they should just have him throw 8. Just let Logan Webb throw 8 in the All-Star game.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly could. That's wild that he didn't. I mean, again, second runner-up in Cy Young last year. Got Cy Young votes 2 years ago. That is really kind of stunning that this is his first one. Just on Robert Suarez quickly. When they gave him that outrageous contract. The Padres were just handing out money. And then last year it was like, why did they do this? Well, this is why they did this, because when he is on, he is indeed one of the best relievers on earth. And that has looked very, very, very good. I know he had a bad weekend, but really bad weekend, like first like disaster of the weekend. But, you know, that's how these timing kind of works for there.
American League position player reserves behind the dish, Salvador Perez, mentioned him earlier, 9th All-Star selection. He's also been bad since June 1st, but he had a 912 OPS, I think, through the first 2 months, so that's not a problem at all. Infield, Carlos Correa, Minnesota Twins, not voted in by his peers, okay, which I find somewhat interesting considering the Astros. On one hand, it's like Astros cheating scandal, people hate him. On the other, everyone who's played with him is like one of the best teammates I've ever had.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Not voted in by his teammates. And also, as it stands, the only Twins All-Star, which is kind of interesting, right? I wrote about a couple. We'll get to the snubs here in a bit. They certainly had some other deserving candidates. Clearly none others that players were that excited to vote for. So the fact that the commissioner's office had to come in and be like, hey, yeah, the Twins need an All-Star, and Carlos Correa has been full-blown Carlos Correa this year. I remember asking Rocco Baldelli earlier this year, like, hey, like, so Correa has been amazing. He's like, yeah, no, he's healthy. It's really not that complicated. Like, he was not last year. He was playing extremely hampered. And now that he is fully healthy again, he is one of the best shortstops in the world. He is outstanding and he deserves it.
Rafael Devers, who homered twice yesterday at Yankee Stadium. We'll talk more about that later. His third All-Star game. Josh Naylor, his first game, Cleveland Guardians. He's the first Guardians hitter with at least 20 bombs at the break since 2018, which says a lot about the Guardians' ability to put the ball over the fence. And also a lot about Josh Naylor. Isak Paredes is the only Rays rep.
As he should be.
As he should be. Yeah. Sneaky under the radar, Elias Diaz style All-Star Game MVP pick for me.
Yeah, Paredes, with respect to Diaz, Paredes, I think already a more accomplished, or at least ceiling. I mean, he's been fantastic. So
Two runners on base. Paredes gets to an Imanaga high-rise heater early and just yanks it off the foul pole. You heard it here first.
Wow. I can absolutely see that.
Marcus Semien in his third All-Star game voted in. He's the only Rangers position player, which is bizarre because they had 4 position players starting in the All-Star game a year ago, and now they're hosting and the defending champs. Things have not gone great for the Rangers. I know they swept Tampa over the weekend, but last year they had Heim, Seager, Semien, and Josh Young all started the All-Star game. And then, of course, Bobby Witt Jr., in his first of many All-Star games, if he played any other position or played in the other league, he would be starting. Gunnar Henderson exists. These two are going to be sharing that spot for the foreseeable future. Moving on to the American League outfield, Jarren Duran, Riley Green, and Kyle Tucker. Tucker won't play. He's currently on the IL, so that'll be a replacement. I would imagine it'll be Anthony Santander of the Orioles. All these replacements will get announced this week. Riley Green voted in by other players. That is cool to see for a young player to know that he's gotten that much respect from his peers, even for an underwhelming Detroit offense. And then Jarren Duran, like, what an electrifying player he is. Great example of, like, if you see him in person for a series, it's like, whoa, that looks different.
Yeah, no, he's one of the most deserving players in the entire. He's been one of the best players in the entire first half. So very glad to see him get it. And then did you mention Kyle Tucker?
I did.
Yes, Kyle Tucker.
And then David Fry.
Yes, David Fry. David Fry. Oh, my gosh.
David Fry,
by the way, last thing to mention about him is also there'll be a lot about Bobby Witt Jr., you know, played high school ball, you know, within half an hour of Globe Life Field. So did David Fry. Grapevine, Texas, same area, not basically like the rival high school of where Bobby Witt Jr. Now he's much older. Yeah, very much so. Now very much older than Bobby Witt Jr. So they didn't play against each other. But he is also from that area. So that is a cool story for David Fry.
Let's move on to the National League and talk about their reserves, if you don't mind. Behind the plate, Will Smith, who had homers in 4 consecutive games over the weekend, and I still don't really care about him until the playoffs because he is so good and so boring at the same dang time.
It's true. He'll probably tell you that himself.
Yeah. Bingo. Infield. CJ Abrams in his first All-Star game selected by the commissioner's office. Incredibly deserving. I believe he has the sixth highest WRC plus since June 1st in all of baseball. It's like Gunner and Otani and Harper and Judge and CJ Abrams or something.
Well, yeah, what's really exciting about CJ Abrams, and I mean, he's clearly just, you know, bona fide franchise shortstop, crushing lefties this year, which is awesome. And remember, he was amazing in April and horrible in May. So to see him go through it and have it not derail his season, and not just did not derail his season, but come out on the other side even better. OPS in April, 992. OPS in May, 519. OPS in June, 1127. So to see him go that far down and come back up and be even better, he is outstanding. Just an incredible, incredible player to build around for the Nats.
Pete Alonso selected by the commissioner's office because for whatever reason, people around, like, players don't like Pete Alonso. And I don't know if that's fair. It's probably worth a longer conversation. He's a kind of a dork, but I think he's kind of likable. Jordan, you believe that he's only in this game so that he'll do the Derby.
Especially the fact that he was a commissioner's selection. Yeah, I'm like, you know, half conspiracy towning this, but I mean, yeah, like, it's not that Pete's having a bad season. You know, he's OPS plus flies right in line. He's got 18 home runs, but he was like the fourth most deserving player on the Mets. And this is just, there's no way. I mean, I understand wanting to have him in the Derby. He wants to do the Derby. Maybe they thought he would only do the Derby if he would be an All-Star. I don't know. This is a bad pick, obviously.
I don't really mind it. He's like, Lindor is going to get there. Speaking of Lindor getting there, Mookie Betts selected, eighth All-Star game. He's not going to go. He's hurt. I would imagine that shortstop spot will go to Francisco Lindor. Luis Arraez voted in by his peers, even though he does one thing really, really well, and he does really, really well, but he is definitely somewhat of a limited player. However, players around the league love and respect this guy for his bat-to-ball ability, and so he will make his third All-Star game, his first with the Padres. Elly De La Cruz voted in by the players, first All-Star game. This is the whole point. He already had a quote that was like, I just want to have fun at the game. Like, hell yeah, you do, buddy. Freddie Freeman in his eighth All-Star game, and then Ryan McMahon in his first for the Rockies, who totally stink. But Ryan McMahon has been a bright spot. His offensive game has ticked up this season. Four National League outfielders, Teoscar Hernandez, who, when the Dodgers signed him, I was like, that's opulent. That feels unnecessary. And that has not been the case. He's been vital, really giving that lineup some length with some of the injuries they've had. He was voted in by the players, second career All-Star game for him. Jackson Merrill, rookie, voted in by the players, is just so freaking cool. He was a shortstop prospect who had never played an inning in center in his entire minor league career, moves to center in spring, entire life, moves to center in spring, makes the team out of camp, struggles for, really treads water for a month and a half.
He was okay. He was, for a 21-year-old, it was like, he is doing his best. Like, you could not complain about how Jackson Merrill was doing. And then it was like, oh, he's one of the best prospects of baseball for a reason. And now he's very much in the NL Rookie of the Year conversation. Like, absolutely in that discussion. He has been one of the best players in the league over the last month.
Elliot Ramos for the Giants, and then Brian Reynolds, who is like the outfield version of Will Smith for me. Really good, respect the game, familiar with it, not sexy. And that's okay. I mean, Brian Reynolds being incredible over the last month is a big reason why the Pirates are like relatively still in the mix. Second All-Star game appearance for him. And then Marcell Ozuna, who is having one of the best offensive seasons in baseball for the Braves. Gotta say, like, we need to, like, people are not prepared to talk about Marcell Ozuna being in the All-Star game and how, like, you know, he was suspended because there was a domestic violence situation with him and his wife. And like, Brian Snitker during the broadcast on Saturday, like, did the thing where, like, you frame it as adversity. And I find that narrative obviously to be unfortunate and like not legitimate and kind of gross in some ways. And I hope that during the broadcast that it's not like, look at what Ozuna has come back from, right? And I just don't know if we as a baseball industry are like able to do that responsibly.
Yeah. Well, we've had a few versions of those and yeah, it's that framing is very important. So we will see how he has talked about. And of course he has been one of the best hitters. He saved the Braves' ass. That's for sure. But I totally agree with you that there, we definitely have to be careful about how we are framing those situations as responsibly as we can. All right. Well, I said we weren't going to name all of them. Well, I guess we named all of them. Now let's name more guys who aren't on the team, because that's really what people care about. I gave my all snub team, which you can read over at Yahoo, of course. Now, you mentioned Lindor. To me, Brandon Nimmo is more deserving than Francisco Lindor. I think I understand it's easy to pull up a F4 leaderboard and be like, what a joke. How is Francisco Lindor not on the team? Francisco Lindor is having a good season. He is an outstanding defensive shortstop who is a good hitter. And that is why his, you know, Fangraphs WAR is so high. But I don't, like, to me, there's just so many other players who are having outstanding seasons for them, especially. And while I agree, when you look at Francisco Lindor, the fact that he hasn't made an All-Star game in however many years is very weird. And if he's there, he, of course, deserves it. Hasn't as a Met. Like, I don't. It's fine. I have no problem with him being there. I just think that there's other guys who have stood out so much more than him in a way that, like, I haven't, I don't know. So, but if you think this is Lindor hate, I don't know what to tell you. Like, I think he's really good, but do you agree with me? Do you know what I mean? Like, does he feel like he's having the best seasons of his career? Like, I don't think he would say that.
He wouldn't say that, but there's also a standard, right? Like, he set that's really high, and it's complicated because, again, his WAR is really high because he's a good defensive, very good defensive shortstop who hits well. But if you look at offensive production, I mean, he's, and if you do WRC plus, right, like he's behind Jonathan India, like he's behind Michael Bush, he's behind.
He's
Jake
been
Cronenworth.
Good, and again,
like,
he's an amazing player. He is a franchise shortstop. There are very few shortstops I pick ahead of him, and like I do like the idea that like the fact that he hasn't been All-Star, like that is someone who we should be defaulting to in the way that we are in some of these other positions.
Correct.
And the players are not.
And
so,
I think that's. Well, let me be clear. That's what people have problem. I think people have a problem with when it comes to Lindor, is that he should be the Marcus Semien. We default to this guy when there's no other option. He has earned that and he deserves that. And for whatever reason, he hasn't gotten that type of respect. And I think that's what irks people. I do think that he will end up there. And I think that I do also agree with you. It's not as simple as sorting by F4. Like, there has to be more than that. That being said, I think that Lindor still passes a different type of barrier.
Yep, that's fair. That said, I think Nimmo was one of the biggest snubs last year, and I think this year even more so when you consider, you know, some of the other, like, I just think he has proven that he is absolutely at this level, and I think he deserves it. Christian Walker, absolutely as well. He has been one of the best first basemen in baseball. Even before he had this obscene hot streak in Dodger Stadium, he should be there. And then Willie Castro, who I also mentioned with the Twins. I just think, too, if you're looking at Twins, that's one that I'm not surprised, you know, people have not totally noticed. Him and Josh Smith both fall in this category as, like, you think about them as, like, oh, these are nice little utility players. Now, Castro was better last season than Josh Smith was this year. But those are ones where it's, like, clearly deserving. Jordan Westberg, another one. I know he didn't end up on my list. And then in terms of pitchers, like, I'm more inclined to focus on the position players, because usually the comparisons are much more easier to be like, how did you screw this up? Whereas the pitchers, Clay Holmes aside, there's so many pitchers that I would want to pick. There's so many starting pitchers. I mean, I listed five. You could have named 15 that I feel like had a really, really good case. And so it's harder for me to get too worked up about those. Although I will say that Ronel Blanco is the one. Sure, the peripherals aren't as good as his ERA, but what he has been for Houston this year. Talk about, oh, where would the Braves be without Ronaldo Lopez? Where would the Astros be without Ronel Blanco? Which is an absurd sentence to say, but it is the truth. They've won 12 of his 16 starts. He has been just a godsend for this disaster of a rotation, inexplicably, mostly due to injury. And he's awesome. And I wish that's the guy that, like, this could be his best chance to make an All-Star team. And I wish he was rewarded as such.
The biggest one for me is Christopher Sanchez of the Phillies.
Sure.
But I would imagine he'll be the Zach Wheeler replacement.
That would make a lot of sense.
Makes sense. But again, if you're a Phillies fan, right, on Monday morning and you have the most all-stars in franchise history and your one takeaway is, where's Christopher Sanchez? Like, let's find the joy, right? Like, let's celebrate Matt Strom and Jeff Hoffman. I think Sanchez will end up being there.
Totally. Anyway, if you want more snub content, obviously, I wrote about that, so you can check that out. All right, Jake. Well, we talked about the All-Stars, and there will be more. Well, again, we will have more coming, and we will have those injury replacements, and those will make people at least mildly less angry.
Just quickly, most likely to try and get out of the game. Like, every year there's like one or two players who, I think the best was Rendon. There was one year Rendon was healthy and he was like, I just like don't want to do this. Who's your pick to finagle their way out of the Midsummer Classic?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Semien is an interesting one.
That would have been my pick, but he can't because it's at home.
Right. Like, I can see him being like, he has, I think, the lowest OPS of anyone on the team by far. So that's one place to start. Like, he probably knows, like, this is kind of weird. I mean, he probably feels obligated to do it at home, but also it's like there's even more, there's like literally even more to do. Like, he's going to be even busier as the Rangers All-Star. And if there's anybody that needs a nap, it's Marcus Semien. I mean, part of the reason why the players love him so much is because he posts, right? He plays every day. So Semien, I can imagine, like, I don't think Rangers fans are going to be mad. Like, he might be like, hey, Josh Smith, you go instead of me, because this is, I don't want to deal with this.
Semien will go. I think you have to be one of multiple selections. Like, you can't bail if you're the only guy on your team. That's a huge component of it. So for me, I think the obvious pick is actually Will Smith. I think Will Smith as a catcher is like, I've done this before. Like, I don't want to. Oh, my knee, my back.
I'm a catcher. Yeah, that's true. Like, have fun, Teoscar. I'm chilling. I'm gonna hang back.
You guys kick it.
Yeah, that seems very, very plausible. But we will see. Again, it will end up getting with more All-Stars, and that is certainly a good thing. Okay, we'll take a break. And when we return, let's talk about the baseball from the weekend. We will organize it into a few of our favorite segments, and we'll run through it. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, George Easterman. We spent too much time on the All-Stars because we love the All-Star game. Actually, don't. We like All-Star week. The game
itself. I like everything involved. Like, I like talking about the All-Star teams. Like, from the moment that the reserves get announced to the end of the Home Run Derby is where I care. Once we get to the game, couldn't care
less. The second they start the red carpet, Jake Mintz and George Easterman have officially tapped out. Dude, the red carpet in the Texas heat is going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, I was wondering
about
that.
They better do that inside. They better do that inside.
Or, like, I can guarantee you, misters like we saw in Phoenix.
I can guarantee you, you know who's not going to be there? Us.
Yeah, no, you won't see us the red carpet. Sorry. All right. They played a lot of baseball this weekend. Let's get to it. As always, if you sweep your series, we get to talk about you first. It's time for Read It and Sweep, Jake. And we only had two this week. No mops. A couple of opportunities that we're not taking advantage of. But we had two sweeps. Some weird ones. Some really weird ones. On Friday, we looked at what the Reds did, where they went into the Bronx and swept the Yankees. And we were like, all right, Reds, it's right there. Here we go. You get to play the Tigers, Rockies, and Marlins going into the All-Star break. This is your opportunity to show us that you can be in this NL postseason mix. And they're like, I got you. Actually, going to get swept at home by the Tigers. First game, they allow four home runs. They lose the close one. They lose late close. Game two, they have Hunter Green against a Tigers bullpen game. Hunter Green is awesome. And they still lose that one. Very unfortunate. And then game three. Uh-oh. How are we going to avoid the sweep? Bad news, guys. We have to face Tarek Skubal. Tarek Skubal, unbelievable. One of his best starts of the year. One of the best pitchers in baseball. He dominates. And the Tigers hang on late, despite a late push from Cincinnati. Reds get swept. No bueno. They trade for Austin Slater last night. Their outfield is completely decimated. They have desperately needed a right-handed hitting outfielder for a while. Austin Slater will maybe help that. He hasn't had a great season. Also, Austin Slater, the longest tenure Giant. It's a very weird way for his Giants tenure to end. But yeah, Very disappointing for the Reds. They now have a four-game series starting at home against Colorado, so hopefully you can kind of make up for that a little bit. But that sucked. That was not a good showing, and good for the Tigers, I guess.
Shouts out to my cousin's boyfriend, Broccoli Rob, who is a Tigers fan, and has been texting me Scooble muscle emoji every time he throws well. And I hadn't responded, Jordan, because, you know, I'm a bad texter, for like five of them. And only yesterday did I realize that he has just been doing this every school start. So shouts out to Broccoli Rob. Shouts out to Tarek Skubal. I'm going to text you back more often. Next series, Texas versus Tampa Bay in the Who Should Sell Off at the Deadline Bowl, brought to you by, you know, like Cabela's. Here's an admission. When I was little, my first interaction with Chick-fil-A was the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. And because I didn't eat meat outside of the house as a kosher kid, I thought it was pronounced Chick-a-filla. And so I used to call it the Chick-a-filla Peach Bowl when I was younger.
Tough.
Embarrassing. Tough.
Did you
that's
also
how you know
think
we're
that,
from
like,
the north?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a tough look for really everybody involved, I would say. I don't even know why you brought that up, but thank you for sharing. The Rangers sweep the Rays. Rangers sweep the Rays. Now, on one hand, it's like, oh, here we go. They're back. Rangers, defending champs. Game one, Michael Lorenzen, sneaky awesome. He beats Shane Boz. He's back. Good to see Shane Boz. Heen Dog, bump day, goes swimmingly. Game two, they beat Taj Bradley, who's been awesome. Love Taj Bradley. And then the Rangers offense finally looks like the Rangers offense. 19 hits on Sunday. They scored 13 runs. They sweep the Rays. Now, here's the bad news. The Rangers just swept the Rays, and they are still two games back of the Rays, and the Rays are bad. So that's kind of all you need to know about this situation. I think that the postseason picture right now, the Rays now 5.5 out of the third wildcard spot. We're starting to find some separation here. And with the Blue Jays, I know the Blue Jays won a series. We'll get to them shortly. This muck here, Tampa, Detroit, Texas, Toronto, are heading towards some difficult conversations. There was some reporting about the Rangers maybe being sellers. I know I got some pushback about the Savali trade indicating the Rays being sellers. I understand that. However, I don't think the Rays are very good. So I think they are too pragmatic to look at their situation and not sell if the opportunity presents itself.
100%. Both of these teams should sell, in my opinion. I think the Rangers will kind of hold on a little bit longer. One, because the run differential indicates that they're much better than Tampa. Two, they have some of these pitchers coming back off the injured list, and so you could like dream on things turning around, and their expectations are a little bit higher coming off a World Series win. But over the weekend, they did take care of business over Tampa. I don't feel particularly great about either of these teams. Those are our two sweeps. Let's move on to the player of the weekend, who is, of course, Rafael freaking Devers. Three long bombs away at Yankee Stadium over the weekend, including two on Sunday night to give the Red Sox the series win over the Yankees. Devers in the stadium is just a phenomenal experience.
He is such a great nemesis to where they, you know, now it's like Yankees fans like intentionally walk him every time. I don't care what the score is. I don't care who's pitching. I don't care who's on base, what the situation is. We are done pitching to this guy. And Aaron Boone's like, nah, man, I'm going to keep pitching to this guy. It's fun. I like why. Maybe Aaron Boone also likes watching Rafael Devers hit home runs. I get it. So relatable. So true. I adore this guy. And he's been one of my favorite players since he came in the league. He has clearly like taken a step up. He has been outstanding for a while now. He has never finished in the top 10 in AL MVP voting. I think this is the year that changes. I'm not saying that he is going to be, you know, in the mix as a front runner, but he should be in the conversation. He has, you know, elevated his power. He's walking more than ever. He is just amazing. And this is what happens when you're in the league for this long and you've already been this good. It's kind of like a version of with Kyle Tucker, where it's like, all right, you're already awesome, but sometimes it really all comes together. I love Rafael Devers, and it's just, I mean, I love watching him do it against anybody, but in Yankee Stadium is certainly delightful.
He now has 16 home runs in his career at Yankee Stadium, which is also great because I'm going to be real with you, like his numbers as a whole at Yankee Stadium are like, they're good. They're not better than his career numbers.
Sure. It's but boy, do those home runs. You just feel those, man.
They're backbreakers. And the thing I loved is like people talking about how David Ortiz was this Yankee killer and then he retires and they just, we found another one. Found another big Dominican left-hander who's just going to kill your dreams for the next 15 years and keep the streak going. The pitch he hit out last night in the ninth against Michael Tonkin
was singular.
Like, you're right. It was unbelievable. That pitch was like a foot out.
Yeah.
Lang's had a note about away.
I mean, we've seen him hit. I can think of multiple that he did against the Mariners multiple times over the last few years. That pitch that he hits out to left center. That's fine. That's also freak behavior in a very impressive way. But this is like, how, like literally, how are you doing this? But that's kind of, that's what makes Rafi special. Now, I will say, Ben Rice had three home runs. Does he deserve a player of the weekend? With his, the story, oh my God, grew up in Boston, but he was a Yankees fan. He went to Dartmouth. Listen, I love Ben Rice. Ben Rice is basically having the season I thought Austin Wells was going to have. So mad respect. And I hope he can keep it up because Ben Rice seems like an awesome story. So maybe his three homer game deserves player of the weekend. But no, the Yankees stink right now. And so I'm going to, and the Red Sox do not stink right now. The Red Sox have been one of the best teams in baseball for a while and probably a month. And man, they, I guess now they're what, four back of New York. So they're coming, four and a half.
So as someone who grew up in the DC area as an Orioles fan, who's taught by his parents to despise the New York Yankees, right? Like as a kid, my mom would sew. I was on the Yankees in Little League and she like sewed red X's over the logos. Like I played in that. Right? I was raised to dislike this team. As I've become a professional, I've tried to chip away at my Yankee hate, right? I'm in that room all the time. The people in that room aren't like worse people than in any other room. I'm trying to be more professional, whatever. But when something like this happens, the Yankee Freude deep inside my soul, I feel a buzzing, right? Like Friday night when the Yankees did everything they could to lose a game, they're still, they need one more strike to win it. Masataka Yoshida hits a game-tying home run. Sidon Rafaela hits a go-ahead homer. And it's like, it's not like I feel happy. Like, I'm not like smiling at the misfortune. It's that you're just like, really, it's this. It's like, it's that noise in that like, face. Whoa. It's like, whoa.
And yet, this feeling has become shockingly familiar over the last 3 years. They have now had a 5-15 stretch in three consecutive seasons, I believe was the note I saw, which is hard to fathom with the rosters that they've built. It's a flawed team. They're not a bad team, but they are right now. And they are in an interesting situation because I'll say this about the Mariners later. You can't go backwards. You can't sell. But what moves you can or need to make to ensure that your season is not wasted again is a challenging proposition for Mr. Cashman.
To me, the combination of Yankee fandom superiority complex, that is an understandable superiority complex because they have been the best team for so long, right? They are the team. They're the most popular team. They have the most rings.
They
right?
All were that is fine. The team.
Easy, Jordan. Easy. We don't want to get canceled, okay? But like that superiority complex coupled with like mediocre baseball, below average baseball, embarrassing baseball. And, you know, it's amplified by the passion that these fans have. It just creates a very fascinating, entertaining dynamic. And I've said this before. I just want the Yankees once in my lifetime to win like 60 games just to see what that looks like.
Well, that's right? The thing.
Last year felt like it. You're right. Yeah. I don't want to revel in the misfortune. I find it interesting. I find it to be compelling. Whereas like 10 years ago, before I was like a professional, I would be like, ha ha ha. Now it's just like, this is
man.
Huh?
Man. Whoa, man. They just keep losing. 20 straight games without a steal in the year 2024. I mean, that speaks to both who's on the roster and who's not getting on base very often. All right, Jake, let's move to a new segment that you're titling Warm Fuzzy Feeling. What is this one?
Sometimes you see something on the baseball machine It just puts a warm, fuzzy feeling in your heart. I'm an emotional guy. You know, I like to cry. I like to feel things. I want to let the joy in. And every once in a while, usually most weekends, there is something that just brings a warmth to my soul, brings a light to my being. And this past weekend, it was Friday night at Petco Park, where the Padres set an attendance record of 47,171 people on a random Friday night against the Diamondbacks, okay? This was not like opening day against the Dodgers or even a playoff game. Okay, the Padres played the Dodgers at home in the playoffs like 2 years ago, and they got more people out to the yard.
Is that true? I assume this was a regular Friday season night. Record.
I believe this is true. 47,171.
Either way, the sentiment stands. And they delivered, right? Now, the rest of the weekend didn't go so well. But for that crowd to be rewarded with one Friday night, by the way, was just out of control. The games we had on Friday night were one of the wildest days of the year, and this was one of them, with the Padres allowing 6 runs in the top of the 9th to squander the lead, only to come back and hit a walk-off home run from Manny Machado and Profar, 2 homers in the bottom of the 9th. That was just a ridiculous game.
But the party energy at Petco Park is so indicative that, you know, late owner Peter Seidler built something special. And I know this isn't breaking news, but every time that place looks like that, you just turn the clock back to what it was like 7 years ago when this team didn't matter. They were very rarely the worst team in baseball, right? But they were always the most irrelevant. And they have gone from that to being purposeful, to being impactful. And that's, again, we've talked about this a lot. That's the point. That's the point of sports, right? And that place being full on Friday night really gave a warm, fuzzy feeling deep inside my soul. You know who didn't like that warm, fuzzy feeling? The Arizona Diamondbacks, who came out on Saturday and Sunday and smashed the baseball all around Petco Park. Their offense has really turned things around. The Snakes, at least at the plate, are alive. 4th best offense in baseball by WRC Plus since June 1st. Ketel Marte has been great. Lourdes Gurriel on fire. Christian Walker, we mentioned. Even Gabby Moreno's figuring it out. Corbin Carroll has gone from horrendous to regularly mediocre.
That's something.
But Arizona, hanging around. They are proving that they do not suck.
They are back to 500 for the first time since, man, I don't even, they've been under 500 since, I think, am I seeing this right? I believe they, this is the first time back to 500 since they were 9-9. Or sorry, they were 38-38 briefly. But man, yeah, they have been under for a long time. So they're 2 games out of the third wildcard spot in the National League. The Snakes are alive is maybe a little strong when we know what it did mean last October. But they're there. They're there. Okay, Jake, now it's time for another edition of Sorry for Your Mentions. This is a two-parter. Let's get the poopy Mariners out of the way. Because I'm actually more excited to talk about the White Sox and Marlins, believe it or not. The Mariners lose a series to the Blue Jays. They had the bases loaded in 3 consecutive innings on Sunday, and they could not score. That is, I would say, bullpen implosions are still probably number one in terms of like what is the fastest way to have a fan base, you know, lose their mind. Struggling, like not getting the runs in that you're supposed to, is probably number two. And when that Mariners tweets out off day tomorrow, then we head to San Diego for 2 games set up. Final score 5-4 Blue Jays. We lose the series. People were not happy.
A bullpen implosion is a very quick, painful death, whereas the not getting runners in over a 2-week stretch is just a slow, methodical, arduous demise into insanity.
All right, so just a couple replies here. This one was funny. This is referring to a ground rule double the Mariners had late where they would have scored if it was like not a ground rule double. Once that ground rule double hit, it was over. No baseball god love. Here's another one. Too many runners left in scoring position. Something has to change. Of course, at a loss for words, 3-6 on this big final homestand before the All-Star break. Sign bats now. Well, you can't sign any bats right now. You could go sign like Robinson Cano out of the Mexican League, or Brandon Belt, as I guess still sitting on his couch. So I guess there are options to sign, but I don't think you can really sign any bats now. And then again, there's so many that are just like, we're doomed. I'm giving up. I see a lot of Polanco hate. How many more games are they going to let Polanco squander away? Somebody is too reluctant to burn a $10 million bill, and it's going to end up costing them. Okay, fire's got service. No way you lost the series to the 2014 Blue Jays. 2024 Blue Jays, sorry. Fair. So people are very, very, very angry. Totally fair. However, kind of what I said about the Yankees earlier, they're still in first place. They're not good right now. You could say that they are not a worthy team. We talked about earlier that this team can't win the World Series. That's fine. You could say all that. This is still as good of a chance as they're going to have to win the division as you'll have. Fangraphs still has them at about 50-50 to win the West. That means you have to push forward. That means you have to still act like a buyer. That means you have to do something. And I think they will. But as bad as it is to watch, this is not a situation where they should be contemplating. It's anyone even thinking about that. It's just outrageous. You cannot be punting on seasons like this. So that's where I'm at with the Mariners. They obviously are not very good right now. Let's go to the Marlins and the White Sox. I'm more excited about this one. Why don't you read the ones you found, and then I want to share something. Maybe you found the same thing, but read some. Basically, this is the key here. Jake Berger hits a walk-off home run against the White Sox. That's amazing. Obviously, the Marlins traded for Jake Berger from the White Sox last year in one of the stranger deadline deals we've seen. It worked out great for the Marlins, and now Jake Berger's having a grand old time in Miami, even though both teams stink. But when Jake Berger hits a walk-off home run against the White Sox, you can imagine the replies at White Sox are going to be pretty spicy.
And that is the context to this Sorry for Your Mentions. If you are a Marlins fan and you see the White Sox on the schedule, or if you're a White Sox fan and you see the Marlins on the schedule, you're like, this weekend is an opportunity for joy, right? We could win a freaking series. That team stinks. I know we stink, but that team stinks too. And so for the White Sox to even lose to the Marlins, and not only to the Marlins, but to the guy you traded away, that is pain. And I would like to begin with a reply that says, this is the lowest point of the season. IDK how, but it is. That is saying something, because this White Sox team has been stuck in Death Valley the entire time. Someone named Jordan responds, my son is going to need antidepressants by the age of 4.
Here's my take on that one. If your son is still that young and you're trying to like coax him into White Sox fandom, there's time to pivot away from that. Like, you can absolutely either steer him, again, Cubs, you wouldn't want to go Cubs at this point, but you can pick some random National League team to be a fan of. Like, go be a Padres fan, you know? Like, save your kid the struggles here. Now, you could also say, oh, the kid's young enough, maybe that they come out of the rebuild by the time he's really paying attention. But if it stays like this, not good.
Wayne says, leave Kopech and Grifol in Miami. Amazingly putrid. Just leaving your manager and the closer on the tarmac. Just rolling out. That's one. Fire Pedro, fire Getz. DFA Kopech. I mean, you just got Chris Getz, but whatever.
DFA and Kopech would be a terrible idea, because someone is still going to trade a prospect for him in the next month, I promise you. I think the Mariners should. I think I would. There are plenty of teams excited to trade for Kopech, and I think they're just waiting for the right deal, as bad as he's been.
Worth the flyer. One guy writes, yo, that bald guy in Miami is pretty nice. We should trade for him. Yeah, very true. Mm-hmm. Just how bad does Kopech have to be demoted or DFA'd? He's the Maldonado of pitching, which is, that is so deep, man. That hurts. And then my two favorite ones. Again, why is Jordan Leisure in AAA? And bring back Jordan Leisure. That's how you know the White Sox season is like.
Okay, like, Jake, did you notice something about those last two ones that you just read? Because this is the best part. From what I can tell, Randy and Ryan Hilliard, who appear to both be in Oklahoma, we'll get to that in a second, 4 minutes apart tweeting at the White Sox, why isn't Jordan Leisure in the big leagues? My theory on this is that they saw Jordan Leisure dominate for Double A Tulsa before he got traded to the White Sox, and they think he's like one of the greatest relievers of all time. But I love that, again, I can't 100% confirm that these two Hilliards are related. However, it sure seems that way because they tweeted each other about Jordan Leisure all the time. And so I love this. I love this. This, talk about warm, fuzzy feelings, is the Hilliard fam hopping in the White Sox replies saying, "We want Jordan Leisure!" Anyway, all right. Let's move on. To our nuclear overreaction of the week. And this was a layup. Shouts out to Colton Brewer, a journeyman Cubs reliever who seemed to kind of have a place in this poopy Cubs bullpen. Well, he isn't going to for a while, because after a very unfortunate outing against the Angels on Saturday, he decided, you know what I need to do? I need to punch this wall, not with my right hand, because I wouldn't be that stupid, but with my left. Oh, whoops, I still fractured it, and now I'm still going on the IL. Colton Brewer, a 31-year-old who has appeared for four different teams over six seasons in the big leagues, not having a great season, but whatever. He was a major league pitcher, and that's good. That means you're doing something right. This is not that. This is unfortunate. There is a very funny photo of him seemingly punching the wall. I don't know if this is actually like a live action shot. I know normally nuclear overreaction is us overreacting to something that is happening here, but this situation is ripe for this description, which is Colton Brewer punching a wall.
His quote about the situation made me laugh so hard.
Oh gosh, I have not seen this quote yet. I'm excited.
Quote, "My intention wasn't to break my hand."
Oh, Colton, thank you. You know, when we go into the clubhouse after the game as members of the BBWAA, what are we hoping for, Jake? Honesty and clarity and explanation. And I was wondering when he punched the wall, I'm sure the Cubs beat was wondering this too, was he trying to break his hand?
Did you mean to do that?
And Colton Brewer, God bless him, said, "Guys, it was not the intention.
It was not my intention." It's like when a guy makes a bad pitch and it gets hit, and a reporter's like, "What were you trying to do with that pitch?" It's like, "Hey, Colton, what were you trying to do when you punched that wall?" "Well, you know, my intention wasn't to break my hand." Oh, now, again, there's more of the quote. I get frustrated and make mistakes. That's no excuse. There's a lot I can prove out there that I'm willing not to do stuff like that. Emotions get the best of us sometimes. But it wasn't his intention. But Jordan, there's one thing I've learned as an adult. Intention does not equal impact, okay? And the impact of his fist hitting that wall broke a lot of bones.
I will say it is interesting because this keeps happening. Like, baseball players keep doing this. And in theory, every time it happens, it's like, oh, now no one will do this again. No one will make this horrible mistake again. But honestly, no, it reinforces that it will definitely happen again. Every time it happens, I'm like, oh, well, this will happen again in 3 weeks.
Idea.
Yeah.
Every team should have a throw pillow taped to the wall of the dugout. Okay. And if you're pissed, you should be able to just punch something cushy so that you don't break your hand.
Scream into it. Just really, really get it out. Okay.
Or here's one. Yeah. There's like a porcelain figurine in every dugout that you could just throw to the ground and smash.
Oh, see, that's better, because I think that is absolutely more satisfying than punching a pillow. Like, you want to break something. You don't want to break your hand, as that has been very made clear. Not the intention.
Yeah. Apparently, you do. Yeah, you're right. Not the intention.
Not the intention.
I wasn't trying to break my hand. Okay. Okay. Cool.
Jake, we still have seven more series to talk about. We're going to throw all of them into turbo mode. All of them.
I'm ready. All right.
You want to alternate?
No.
Let's. Oh, okay, fine. Go ahead.
Okay, we can. Fine. Let's alternate. I'll go first. Minnesota takes 2 out of 3 from Houston. Absolute drunk game on Friday night with the Astros winning 13-12. Minnesota takes the next two. But we need to talk about Jose Miranda, who had 12 straight hits, 12 consecutive plate appearances with a hit, more hits than his cousin, Lin-Manuel.
Mm. Actually, his cousin, just to be clear.
Actually, his cousin, not like an offensive joke. They are actually related.
Yeah. 12 straight hits is completely ridiculous. He also, like, single-handedly launched himself into all-star consideration by having 12 straight hits. More importantly for the Twins, Brooks Lee is here, and Brooks Lee is awesome. So that is a big deal for the Twins offense. They have certainly been playing well. They take 2-3 from the Astros, despite one of the greatest catchers I've ever seen, courtesy of Joey Loperfido. You didn't think it was that good.
No, it was great. I was just trying to be a hater. If everyone could stay healthy, Miranda, Correa, Lee, Royce Lewis is an infield to get irrationally excited about.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Dodgers. Ever heard of him? They take the first 2 out of 3 from Milwaukee, and then Dallas Keuchel comes on in. The Mariners traded him to the Brewers for cash. It wasn't very much cash. And now Dallas Keuchel started for the Brewers as they try to fortify their rotation, and he beats the Dodgers. Very impressive.
With a pitching line that we have not seen in 13 years, Dallas Keuchel on Sunday, 4 1/3, no runs, 5 walks, no Ks. I'm going to say that again, just for emphasis. 4 1/3 frames, no runs, no punchies, 5 free passes. It is the first time in 13 years that a player has thrown at least 4 innings, no strikeouts, 5 walks, and no runs since Vin Mazzaro did it against the Angels. Jay Happ also did this, and then a bunch of guys I never heard of. This is very hard to do in this day and age because, like, if you are the type of pitcher who throws 4 innings and doesn't strike anybody out, chances are you're going to let up a home run, right? Like, and that's a run. And so good for Dallas Keuchel, who, that guy just is holding on, man. I have gained more respect for Dallas Keuchel over the last 3 years when he's been mediocre and raging against the dying of the light than I did when he was like a Cy Young Award winner. This is a dude who really likes playing baseball. And kudos to him. Still, Dodgers take 2 out of 3. Will Smith hit home runs in 4 straight plate appearances, which if he had just done that in one game, we would care more. Or if he was not Will Smith. No offense to Will Smith. Next series. Yeah, I'm just going to do them all. Sorry, Jordan. Atlanta takes 2 out of 3 over the Phillies in a relatively underwhelming rematch between these two teams that play in the playoffs every year. A preview this year? Who's to say? Game one, Trey Turner launches a huge home run. I believe actually 2 home runs for the Phillies. They take game one. And then game 2 and 3, Braves take a both Schwellenbach. Very good in game 2. Phillies could have used Harper and Schwarber. Braves knock Rangers Suarez around a little bit. Game 3, Reynaldo Lopez just is better than Michael Mercado at baseball. And that's really why the Braves won. Important for the Braves to take 2 of these games, I think. Important for the Phillies to not get swept, right? I think both teams, considering where they're at right now, leave the series feeling fine. They will play 2 more times this season. And those will, they're always good. Like, they're always good games. These are, I'll be honest, like, as someone who, Jordan, I don't know if you know this, I've watched a lot of Braves Phillies over the last couple of years. Sure have. And this was just like the most whatever, like, the first game was really good. And the next two were just like, the Braves pitchers are dominant. That was really it. Good for the Braves. Moving forward, we have 4 or 5 more showdowns. Rockies take 2 out of 3 from the Royals. Austin Gomber, mega gem in game 2 to beat Seth Lugo. Very odd 9th inning in game 1 with Garrett Hampson bunting in a 3-0 count in the 9th inning with 2 guys on base. And the Royals don't score a run. Just like very odd stuff. Kansas City breaks out with home runs on Sunday from Michael Garcia, MJ Melendez, and Bobby Witt Jr. Baltimore 2 out of 3 in Oakland. But the headliner here is that the A's scored 19 runs in game 2. Cade Povich, Orioles starter, kind of poo-pooed his pants, but that's life. Craig Kimbrel, 2 more saves. Rack them up, knock them down. Anthony Santander and Heston Kjerstad with home runs in game 3 in the 1st inning. Cleveland took 2 out of 3 from the Giants. You were at game 1 of the series, I believe.
I was at game 2 of this series. Stephen Kwan hitting his first career home run to center field. Obviously, most of them have been pulled. He is just amazing. And Class A is also still amazing. And they come back late. Bo Naylor with probably his biggest swing of the year with a home run late to take the series on Sunday.
And then two series have yet to conclude. The Nats and the Cardinals in the Pete Cosmo Bowl. They will play today in Game 4. Mets and Pirates are also going to play today. St. Louis took 2 out of 3 over the weekend from the Nats. James Wood hit his first home run. Like, that home run was so indicative of why this guy's different. Just easy swing off Lance Lynn, backside, Tater. Did you see the Lance Lynn pitching line from Saturday, by the way, Jordan, in the game the Cardinals lost?
I know he was munching on those innings, but I did not see the final line.
He got, you know, like the meme of a guy with like a fork and a knife and like a napkin around his neck and like slamming the utensils on the table? Like, I'm hungry. I want to eat. That was Lance Lynn munching up outs. His line, 2 2/3, 2 2. He didn't really even munch him up. 2 2/3, 9 hits, 11 runs, but only 10 earned. 4 walks, 2 Ks, 3 homers. 11 runs allowed in getting not 8 outs. Like, that's hard to do. That's really hard to do.
Cardinals, though, they're up 2-1 in this 4-game set. And then the Mets and Pirates. Paul Skeens, ever heard of him? really though, the Pirates, again, finally some run support for Mr. Skeens as the Pirates hit, 7 home runs. Is that correct? The idea of this team hitting 7 home runs in one game is hard to fathom, but that is what happened on Friday as they win 14-2. Skeens goes 7 innings. Once again, he is just ridiculous. But yeah, when you hit 7 home runs, 3 of them off poor Ty Adcock, Mariners legend, that's going to be a tough day at the yard. But the Mets are up 2-1 in this series as well.
How many weeks have the Pirates gone this year without hitting 7 home runs? I would love for someone to tell me that. Probably a few. And they did 7-1 game. The game on Sunday, just a Aroldis Chapman masterclass in the 9th inning with the Pirates up 1. Walk, single, punchy, punchy, wild pitch, walk, single, walk. Kyle Nicklaus, please enter the game. The Aroldis Chapman experiment in Pittsburgh has not exactly gone how the Aroldis Chapman experiment went last year in Kansas City.
I mean, 21% walk rate and having a 4 ERA is, he is defying so much about what should be possible. But... yeah, Pirates having some issues, but hey, who's coming to save them? Our dear friend Brent Honeywell Jr. finally getting the call up. Shouts out to Mr. Honeywell. Maybe he'll pitch today in the series finale. So glad that Brent finally got the call. It only took 7 million injuries. All right, Jake, that was a long podcast. That was a fun podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you have thoughts about All-Stars, thoughts about All-Star snubs, chances are by the time you're listening to this, we've already started to hear about some of the injury replacements, but we appreciate you listening. Thank you for supporting us.
I'd like to talk about the week ahead, John. Tonight, the Harlem Little League 12U All-Star team will be playing in game 1 of the district championship series here in New York City. I'm very excited. I'm not coaching this team, but these are kids I've worked with quite a bit over the last four years. And just want to, I'm going to be there tonight. Con Ed Field, Lower Manhattan, 545 against Greenwich Village. Be there, be square. All right. Harlem Little League needs to win 2 games, double elimination tournament. We got to win both against Greenwich Village. And if we do, we will win districts for the first time in over 2 decades. And I will be very happy and proud. So stay tuned.
Good luck. Good luck.
Maybe
to those
you'll
kids.
See me in Williamsport.
Maybe you're only like 20 more wins away. But hey, good for them. Obviously, always excited to hear how the kids that you have coached up are doing. I know not directly with these teams, but still, it's very cool.
Whenever you've never really had this experience, you know, like people always say to us, like, oh, when you become a father, it's just like changes your life. When you throw a front toss to kids competing for a Little League district championship, it changes your life.
I can imagine. I can imagine. That makes sense. Email us.
Also be, yeah. I'm not done. Let me finish.
I'm sorry. This is like the longest pod of the season. I'm just trying to get people on their merry way. Go ahead.
I will be headed to Philadelphia this week as well for Phillies Dodgers. which that'll be freaking fun. Very excited for that. And then Jordan Schusterman on Thursday, we are headed to Tejas for the All-Star game.
Tejas on our way down.
We're not snubbed.
They don't have a choice. I guess they could. They could snub us if they reject our credentials. Hopefully that doesn't happen the next week. We are heading to Texas. We will be there for almost a week. All kinds of stuff coming up. We'll preview more of that stuff on Wednesday. But until then, thank you for listening. Thank you to Hillary Georgie for producing this lengthy episode of Baseball Barbecast. You can email us at baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you later this week.